It's September the 3rd, 2010. This is 508, a show about Worcester.
And look what a beautiful city Worcester is on September the 3rd, 2010.
This is the most beautiful hurricane we've had up in this region in some time.
Is there a hurricane hitting us today, Brendan Mellican?
I think it's supposed to be tonight, but it's starting to fizzle out, apparently.
Well, we don't have any drug paraphernalia today, unless you want to count alcohol as drugs. We've got a vodka thing and a natty ice cap and a little Seagram's bottle and drunken squirrel, apparently. So that's what drug decriminalization has gotten us. It's people drinking in the woods.
Eating Starburst.
Well, it's been a super busy couple of weeks since we last did a show, and we're going to talk about people running in the upcoming primaries for statewide elections. We're going to talk a little bit about if there's anything worth reading in the Telegram and Gazette. We're going to talk about a little bit about finances, maybe a little bit about home ownership. A little bit about our Facebook group, and a little bit about Jeff Barnard. Well, Brendan,
Michael,
you're an unenrolled voter, but would you say you're a Democratic operative?
I think you would say that I'm a Democrat. Well, I know I'm being paid by a Democrat to run a statewide campaign now here in Worcester County, so I guess I'm an operative of sorts.
All right.
A Democrat, but I don't think it changes my affiliation necessarily.
So with this disclaimer out of the way, and I'm, by the way, I'm also an unenrolled voter and potentially not going to vote in this upcoming election. That's how controversial this show is. We wanted to talk a little bit about people who are running in the upcoming primaries, because I was having a hard time keeping these guys straight, even though I see their signs everywhere. I was having a hard time keeping these guys straight. Last night we went to the District 13 state rep debate, where there are six Democrats running in a primary for this seat. And then on the national level, there are five Republicans running in a primary to replace Jim McGovern, potentially, hopefully, in their mind, replace Jim McGovern for United States Representative. And those guys, I still have no idea. Although, I saw Marty Lamb at the Worcester Half Marathon. Not running.
Mm-hmm.
This, we'll come back to that later. Let's talk about the people who are running for, maybe not for your party, but for your bosses. Who do we have here? We have,
I think we can do this off the top of my
head. Don Sherry.
Yeah, Don Sherry, Margot Barnett, Geoff Smith, Mike Parrotto, Gina DeBarrio, and John Mahoney.
Okay, so some of these people we know from Worcester politics.
Sure.
Such as Mike Parrotto, former longtime counselor, was defeated. Geoff Smith, current city councilor. Margot Barnett, long time active in various things.
Mm-hmm.
Gina DeBarro, prosecutor, not somebody who I knew though.
DA's office, yeah.
John Mahoney, who owns Mahoney's Bar.
Yeah, he's a local businessman. He ran a sticker campaign against Bob Splaine kind of at the last minute 2 years ago. This same seat.
I call him Spammin' John Mahoney. After the last time he ran for Worcester City Council, and he spammed me, which I'm having a hard time forgiving. And did we already say Don Sherry?
Yes.
When Don Sherry's...
has not held elected office. He runs an insurance company of sorts, selling insurance policies to local business.
So a couple of these guys... So we actually have a lot of people who are in the insurance biz running. And we've got a lawyer running. And Margot, I don't know what her background is.
Margot is a holistic medicine chiropractor.
Oh, really? And we've got... Yeah, so we've basically got...
Or I guess I should say a chiropractor with a focus in holistic medicine.
Okay,
so.
And Geoff sells some kind of
Geoff,
mortgage
his background
stuff?
Is in finance, like a financial planner.
Okay, so we've got people... And you know, that's actually something I always wonder whenever these guys talk about this is... Whenever you say, like, I'm in the insurance business or I'm in the finance business or even I'm in the real estate businesses, I always kind of want people to then define, are you one of the people who got us into this mess or not? Like, were you involved in the kind of stuff which, you know, on a national level, like, screwed up the economy?
Well, nope. This is one of the field, if you just look at it from, like, people's backgrounds, professional backgrounds, the field is actually really well-rounded, right? I mean, you've got people who seem, at least on the surface, understand finance, understand running a small business, understand healthcare, understand insurance. I mean, all of the things that once the legislature gets back into formal session are going to be waiting for them on the table to deal with on a state level. You can go even further and say, you know, Ron Madnick, obviously his background with the ACLU, and obviously a huge issue. And then on the Republican side, you go Paul Franco, a JAG attorney. Same thing, right? I mean, these are all very relevant topics. But it's also kind of the point, I think, too, that none of those folks have really done a tremendous job of identifying what it is they actually stand for, even using their professional background as like the starting point.
Yeah, this was actually a frustration watching the debate, was that like this is one of these kind of things that I'm glad that the Telegram Gazette reports on, but it's not worth you paying a dollar to read their reportage of it because nobody is really standing out.
It's not that the reportage is bad, it's that there just really isn't much to report on.
Yeah. Well, so, and also I can let's see, based on their closing statements, here's what these Democrats are all defining themselves about. Parado bringing up crisis and saying that he would like to see the role of the state rep involving being an ambassador. DeBarro, no special interests, new vision, because DeBarro hasn't held elected office before. Barnett, leadership, partnerships, synergetic solutions. Mahoney, not an insider, no issue too small. He started off his thing by saying the system is broken. Sherry, promote the city, biotech park, I'm an outsider, create jobs. Joff Smith, taxes, 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 and taxes. I'm against all taxes. That was their self-definitions. So I don't know. Maybe people can vote for this.
I have to say, I'm a little worried for your employers in this race, just because like
my employers have nothing to do with this race.
Well, I guess okay, that's true. You're not paid by any of these candidates. I'm a little worried about the party, this party, than this Democratic Party, just because like I can totally imagine some Scott Brown kind of situation where like I don't know anything about Paul Franco. Mm-hmm. If Paul Franco turns out to be a strong on the debate, in the debates.
Like, I mean, I said this to you earlier. I mean, his campaign manager, Chris Pinto, was in the room last night watching. I mean, it was a packed room. There was a lot of people who were not directly related to the race there in attendance. Some state reps, some you know community activists from other parts of the city and whatnot. People obviously have their eyes on the race, but you know, Paul Franco's campaign manager was in there, and they must be having a field day just watching these folks again because nobody's really doing a good job of defining themselves and separating themselves from the pack. Whereas once they come through the primary, and you've got Ron Madnick and one Republican candidate waiting for them there who have already kind of defined themselves just by being the sole representative of either the independent vote or the Republican vote there, it's going to be much easier to start swinging at whoever comes out of this primary because of the sort of infighting has led to folks just trying to be as moderate as possible and as appeasing as many people as possible, which becomes a lot easier to start picking apart when you have diametrically opposed views.
Yeah. Well, let me try to characterize these guys then, since they didn't strongly characterize themselves. So okay, first of all, I'm not going to endorse anybody. What's the opposite of endorsing? Undorsing. I'm going to undorse spamming John Mahoney, because John Mahoney spammed me during the last Worcester City Council election, and no one should ever vote for him for dog catcher, much less district rep, in my opinion, because he's a spammer.
That's the new litmus test. It's their contemporary.
That's it. That's it.
You know what? How these guys feel about abortion? Not as important as whether or not they've spammed me. Mike Parado, on the city council for many years. This is actually where I was frustrated about people being able to distinguish themselves, because Mike kept talking about, like, I would like to see, like, I would like to be a district rep who went beyond the legislative responsibilities, mm-hmm. and who was, like, out there doing outreach to businesses and whatever. And what I wanted to hear any of these guys say is, like, they feel strongly about stuff. What are you doing in your life? What are you doing now? Because nothing is keeping you from being active in any of the issues you mentioned right now. Mm-hmm. Without being, like, what are you doing now if you care so much about these issues? I wanted to hear Mike say, and this is why I am working with the Chamber of Commerce or whoever, and this mm-hmm. is why I, as a former city councilor, am out there using that juice to be an ambassador and do this kind of stuff now. And I would be more of an ambassador if I had also the juice of being the district rep. But I didn't hear Mike say this. And get it together, Mike Parado. Like, you got to tell me why I should vote for you rather than not voting and feeling smug about not voting. Joff Smith, you know, current city councilor, like, I don't know, like, again, like, I felt like, it almost feels like having held elective office is kind of a negative in this, because people can kind of look at you and say, what did you do?
Right.
Part of the problem is that the Worcester City Council doesn't have a lot of power.
Well, yeah, but, you know, there's still also, you know, Joff's been in a couple terms now. There's a good opportunity there to take look at all the votes he's taken and tell people why he took those votes, right? Mm-hmm. And even if people disagree, at least you're able to take a stand and explain yourself as to, this is why I did these things.
Right.
And there's a great opportunity to separate yourself from the rest of the field because you actually have an ideology and you're not just trying to be everybody's friend. again, I think it's a missed opportunity where you might lose a few people along the way, but I think there's still a healthy respect out there when it comes to voters, even if they disagree, a lot of respect for somebody who is willing to take a stand for something.
Well, Diane Williamson was one of the moderators, and so was Gary Rosen, and so was somebody from PAXN whose name I don't remember. And
Martha Axted, who works for Bob's Blade and lives out in PAXN.
Okay.
Used to write for Worcester Magazine.
Okay. One of Diane's questions was basically, would you be willing to talk trash about each other? And people love that question. And,
that was to John Mahoney, and she was asking him, you know, to identify who he considered to be the front runner, and then why should everybody in the room not vote for that person?
Yeah. Mahoney's... I'm trying to remember who said this.
He identified Joff, if I'm not mistaken, but I don't really think he gave a clear answer as to why we should not vote for him.
Well, he brought up the city council papers, but he also said that Smith has been a follower, not a leader on the council. And I guess that would be my summary of trying to distinguish. This is the trouble of dealing with is that the Worcester City Council is a weak position. Mm-hmm. So if you want to be perceived as a leader and not a follower on that council, you got to put it out there. And you're going to take hits for even trying that, as our beloved Gary Rosen found out, bringing up awesome ideas like rubber sidewalks or whatever. And people would be like, oh my God, you're not going to build a sidewalk out of concrete? You're a moron, Gary Rosen. How could you possibly ask the city to explore anything new? Right? And but the man was definitely out there pushing weird stuff. Or even if you're freaking Joe, what's his face? Not Joe, what's his face? The guy who doesn't want you to vote for him, Bill Eddy, and you're out there saying the city should become these experts in dog breeds and dog behavior, and ban new restrictions on dogs based on the shape of their nose. That's at least something, right? That's at least something.
What I mean. I mean, even if people disagree with that, you still have to give credit to somebody for at least having an idea and putting something out there and trying to build consensus around the idea. I kind of reject the notion that the city council, and I know this is a belief that the city council itself, the members, seem to hold, but I kind of reject the notion that they don't have any power. I think the reality is that, they just don't use the power that they have as an effective bargaining tool when it comes to their relationship with the city manager, which is a completely different issue, but kind of misses the point. Yes, we have a city manager form of government, but the city manager still relies upon the council to either keep him as city manager or take his ideas and make sure that they're voted on in a way that, favors him, or also bring issues to the city manager and get him to kind of move them forward as well. So, I mean, it's a relationship that relies upon both parties. In a way, it's like the perfect setup of checks and balances, that we have everywhere else in government. It's just not used to a full extent.
And you're right, because actually I'm thinking of the another city councilor current city councilor who was there, Connie Lukes, who nobody would say, as they said of Smith, he's a follower and not a leader. And nobody could say, as Prado said of Smith, he's kind of slow.
Correct.
Connie Lukes is very strong leader, and you know exactly what Connie Lukes is about. And
as a divisive figure, people either seem to love or hate Connie, but at the same time, I think most people at least have a healthy degree of respect for the fact that on the surface, she's out there doing her thing and holding her ground when it comes to her own ideas. People might disagree with them, but again, they can see an ideology, they know where it's going, they know where she's going to go next, and people respect that. You're not just trying to sit on the fence and be everybody's friend.
There you go. Well, let me try to distinguish other people then. So I was able to distinguish Parado. No. Not able to distinguish Parado. Not able to distinguish Smith. Well, both of them at least have elected experience. Margot Barnett was talking a lot about green jobs, a lot about the new economies kind of stuff. And it was, sort of making vague allusions to, I've been working on these issues for a long time. And I guess this is through the REC and other stuff. Mm-hmm. This is the other thing is, none of these people actually do their paths cross mine. And, the one candidate in the debate whose path goes across mine is Ron Matnick. And as somebody who's basically not a full-time journalist, I see, and who's more of a voter than a journalist, this is the candidate's problem.
Right.
Not my problem, that they're not, out there. I mean, they're all out there in the city doing stuff, but they're not out there in the city doing stuff that's, touching me. So Margot, again, I just wish that she had said, this is what I've actually done on green jobs. This is what I've actually done on any of this stuff. I don't know. It would have been interesting to hear her talking about holistic chiropractic
or whatever.
Well, again, everybody in the field has a background that is in at least some way relevant to, you know, the big issues of the day, right? So, I mean, just frame that that background in a meaningful way so that people actually understand that when you get into the legislature, if you get into the legislature, you're going to have a strong opinion and be a strong voice for the issues that are represented by your professional background.
Yeah, well, yes. Actually, the one thing she did distinguish herself on was people kept bringing up, like, Margot Barnett has all these endorsements. Mm-hmm. And, like, this shows that she's beholden to the special interests. But at least she has endorsements. So that was interesting, actually, for people to be like, this is the candidate who's endorsed by your neighbors to neighbor, the mayor of Worcester, these kinds of people.
The MTA, a couple different labor groups. And, yeah, I mean, there's always the argument that, you know, those endorsements can hurt more than they can help. But you have somebody endorsing you. You know, I mean, we might not like the, you know, many people might not like labor unions, right? I mean, that's fine. We can debate labor unions on another show. But the reality is that labor unions are also made up of voters. And, you know, in the case of the MTA, which has been a big supporter of Margot, the teachers affect a lot of people in this district, right? I mean, either by residing in the district or having kids, you know, in the district or whatever the case may be, kids in school. You know, I mean, it's something that actually does touch people's lives. So it could be viewed as a negative, but it should also just be taken away as, like, here's a group of people, professionals, that actually like where this person is going. And that's, I think that has more value, again, than not really being for anything tangible.
Well, I'm doing these in the wrong order, because John Mahoney, obviously, we said what distinguishes him is that he sends people unsolicited email. Don Cherry? Man, I don't know what to say about Don Cherry. He had a guy in Tatnik Square throwing a sign around.
He hired those kids that stand on the street corners flipping the signs around, which is a novel in a way, right? I mean, that he's doing something a little bit different, but at the same time, by flipping a sign around so you really can't read it, makes you dizzy. I don't know if that's the best strategy, but
well,
his signs stand out at least.
Yeah. Gina DeBiro, former prosecutor, again, like, I would have liked to hear a little tough talk.
Well, I mean, right, professional backgrounds, right? I mean, here's somebody who deals with law every day in a professional life. It's a great opportunity to speak to, you know, as your role as a legislator, your job is going to be creating law, right? So, I mean, where do you see the holes in current, you know, our current legal system as a prosecutor? Where have things gone wrong? I mean, you see this on a daily basis. It's a great opportunity to say, this is what I can bring to the table as a legislator based on my, you know, professional experience as a, not just a lawyer, but a prosecutor dealing with the laws that the Mass Legislature has created since its inception. I feel as though I'm creating talking points now for candidates, but I mean that would seem to be the no-brainer, right? I mean, we know that there are plenty of broken aspects to our legal system. There are plenty of great aspects to our legal system. You are the one person on this stage who can speak to all of those because you deal with them on a daily basis in a courtroom.
There you go. Well, I wanted to switch over to something else, and then maybe we'll pick up the District 3 Republicans real quick. I want to thank Victor Infante of the Telegram Gazette for writing so much good stuff about his thoughts about the website that I started, Is There Anything Good in Today's
TNG.com,
that you've taken the hit for, but did not actually write. And I want to actually respond to some of his comments, but not on today's show. Anyway, I just thought it was fantastic. Like, it's fantastic whenever a one-word website gets so much, like, thoughtful commentary from somebody who's really involved with it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the dialogue between Worcester's bloggers and Worcester's professional journalists, with the exception of Worcester Magazine people, the Telegram Gazette people always seem to have this bizarre chip on their shoulder, yeah. I guess it seems to me bizarre, and I guess the more that there's discussion back and forth, maybe that chip on the shoulder makes a little bit more sense to us. So thanks for that discussion.
Yeah, it's definitely more understandable, and I think if we go back to, like, the beginning of when we started doing this show a number of years ago, I mean, there didn't seem to be any sort of really relationship between the folks who were just commentators on what was going on in the city online and blogs and what have you, and the professional journalists in the city, but it seems as though there is more of a relationship back and forth, and sometimes it's something as small as a one-word website that can spark enough emotion with folks on both sides of that issue to actually get people communicating, and that communication probably wouldn't happen if it wasn't for a silly one-word website.
And also for LiveJournal. So thanks to LiveJournal too. We've got 499 likes on our Facebook page. I said that if there was 500, we would give a prize to somebody. And, like, literally, we're even shooting the show late today. There's 499 likes. So I don't know. Next, I guess, is going to be we're going to be shooting for 1,000 likes at some point.
Tom McCarthy on our Facebook page posted a comment, which I think this is referring to us, saying open, unbiased news is always the best news source. Tom, you need to watch more episodes of this show if you think this is open. This is maybe open, but it's not unbiased, by no means. The best thing that happened while I was gone was that Nicole started a project called Wormtown Fleet. You know, Jeff Barnard, Worcester's greatest blogger, has been ill with cancer. One of the awesome things that he would always do as he drove around in a cab is he would take photos of stuff around the city. And in fact, it was very helpful, you know, like for some of our projects, like the Southwestern Industrial Park, to be like, well, let's go back 2 years in Jeff's blog and see what he wrote, posted photos of this. Because otherwise, there's no going to be no photo of like what this building looked like just before and after it was demolished. Right. Because Jeff's been sick, he's not been driving around and doing his like bump installation crew and other, series that he's been committed to. So she started a project called Wormtown Fleet, which says bloggers in Worcester should post some photos around the city, and then they can tag them using this website or something, and there can be like a list of all the people who are basically trying to pick up the slack from Jeff. It's kind of funny because we always sometimes talk about bloggers trying to pick up the slack as the newspaper shrinks a little bit.
Right.
And here's people just trying to pick up the slack from one sick blogger. That's the power of Jeff Barnard, ladies and gentlemen. I'll post a photo or something and we'll...
Jeff made a nice post about that either late last night or this morning too, about the project there. And it is something that's interesting and taken for granted in a weird way where, you know, Jeff as a taxi driver, I think, saw more of the city on a daily basis than... most people do in their regular routine, because we have routines and people tend to drive. My dog. No problem. People tend to drive, from one place to another. The same route every day. And Jeff being kind of all over the place exposed people to things that they wouldn't normally see in the process of their routine.
Yeah, and I'm really glad to see that Jeff is doing well enough to be back at the computer. I guess there's been some finance scandals among politicians, but I don't care.
Isn't that part of being a politician?
I don't know. I mean, none of these just... They seem like these guys are always doing this kind of stuff. I think it's probably... I don't know. Somebody else who's interested in this could explain to me why. I'm not saying that finance scandals are unimportant. I guess I'm just saying that as someone who feels that, like, power is... Power... That power corrupts and politics is complicated, or running for office is complicated, like, either people are mildly corrupt or people are mildly confused.
Right.
Like... This just confirms my own feelings. I'm not as shocked by this, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the issues that came up the other day with, it looked like it was failure to pay taxes on things like CDs and whatnot that were being used to...
not compact discs.
No, being used to package campaign finance dollars and what have you. I mean, I would have to imagine that these campaigns are all big enough where they probably hire accountants and pay accountants a significant amount of money to maintain, an eyeball on those accounts. And if that isn't being done, I mean, can you really fairly blame the candidate? I guess so. I mean, they're supposed to be managing the oversight and what have you. But again, I mean, if the IRS called me today and said my accountant's been screwing up for the last 5 years, I think I would probably look at that and say, well, that's kind of my accountant's fault, right? And that's right. Why I pay somebody to do this, someone who's licensed by the state of Massachusetts to take care of this for me, because I suck at math. I'm not a big enough boy to do my own taxes, so I pay someone to do it for me. It's kind of the same thing in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that it's okay, but... can Tim Murray or Guy Glotis really be, managing their own campaign checkbooks when it's approaching, $1 million apiece made up of $25 donations that comes and goes over the course of every campaign cycle?
I don't know. Maybe they can, maybe they can't. In any case, I don't care. Did you want to show that shirt?
I'd love to show this shirt. Sure. So Louis Desprez got these printed up. Promoting the NRA, I guess it's one of those things that's probably lost to history, but this is actually stands for the National Recovery Act, part of FDR's New Deal. I'm sure it would be interpreted as having a high level of irony going along with it if he showed up in certain political circles these days. People probably would not get what the logo actually stood for, but we'll test that one out in the next Tea Party rally I can find.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Nice shirt. I think we have like 5 minutes. Can we talk about these Republicans in 5 minutes? Do you know anything about these guys running? So we've got Chipman, Hare, Stopa, Dell,
I guess.
Dell, and Lamb. And like I said, Lamb was out saying that like the city council shouldn't object to Arizona's trying to enforce immigration law on the state level.
And also Lamb was not running in the Worcester Half Marathon. All I got to say about Marty Lamb showing up the Worcester Half Marathon with a sign and not with running shoes on is, like, you know, like, again, like, these are five guys who I don't know personally. Mm-hmm. For all I know, Marty Lamb is an accomplished long-distance runner. I hope he is.
He doesn't run anything less than a formal marathon.
He's an ultra runner.
Can't be bothered with 5Ks.
I don't know. All I know is, you know, anybody who's running for... Actually, we should just mention this. Anybody who's running for anything, who's running as a challenger, can be on this show. Like, next Friday is probably too close to the primary that any of these guys are going to waste the time being on this
right.
show. Any independent candidate, anybody who's running anything, if you're not currently a politician, you can be on this show. We will put you on this show. You can sit here on a log with us. We will not bully you. We will not embarrass you. You may embarrass yourself.
But, you know, there's five challengers there. So if only one of those challengers steps up and likes 508 on Facebook, it'll put us over that 500.
They could win a prize. They could win a prize.
They could win a prize.
Think of that. Think of the happy voters.
I'm sure Marty Lamb would love, a National Recovery Act T-shirt.
So Marty Lamb has done his bit to become visible by doing stuff like that. Mike Stopa, Harvard physicist Mike Stopa, as someone who actually graduated with a bachelor's of physics, I should know more. I should have done some research on Mike mm-hmm. Stopa. I don't know if he's faculty or professor or what. You said he's done some publishing or whatever in physics.
He seems to be pretty heavily published, but I don't know if he's faculty or if he's teaching at Harvard or. Where he actually fits in over there.
This is why I'm telling you, as far as being journalists, we're kind of more journalists, because, like, what is the classic thing of the journalist is smoking and drinking. It's happening on this show. Hank Stoltz, bring it on.
Where's your Seagram's
Hank Stoltz? Who's smoking on the set of your show? But actually, as far as publishing goes, I just saw that there was a sticker that says Mike Stopa is a raving lunatic.
Yes, I mean, Mike Stopa has the science background, right? I mean, it should all be about evidence and reason and logic. But he is also one of the candidates running against McGovern, who has managed to kind of throw out there or get mixed up in Obama's religion. Right. And, whereas there's a handful of candidates running against McGovern who have convinced themselves that Barack Obama is neither a U.S. citizen or a Christian, that he's a Muslim. I'm not sure why that actually matters.
Secret Muslim.
Secret Muslim.
Crypto Muslim.
Mike is taking this a step further and is claiming that Barack Obama has no faith in anything, is an atheist. Again, I don't know why that's a negative either.
Is he also a nihilist?
Yeah, he believes in nothing. And there's some folks put up on Cafe Press Mike Stopa's point was there's no evidence that Barack Obama is a man of faith at all. And some folks put up a sticker on Cafe Press saying that we have evidence that that Mike Stopa is a raving lunatic. So there's these nice Mike Stopa is a raving lunatic bumper stickers out there for sale for $4.99. And that's it. I'm going to be really upset. If we get to November and there has not been like a shooting on the highway or something over a bumper sticker involving one of these races, I'm going to be severely disappointed. And I'm not looking for someone to get hurt, but it just seems as though like there's so much anger and hostility built up around these races that something has to give at some point in time, right? I mean, there just has to be, like, road rage, something, car windows being blown out. I'm going to be upset if we don't really go over the edge on this one here.
I want to see Mike Stopa put one of those stickers in his car. I would totally put a sticker like that on my car.
Yeah, take some pride in it, I guess.
That's not a bad deal.
Marty Lamb has a lot of bumper stickers. Did you notice that when you were
at
the race?
I noticed that. I haven't done my commentary on lawn signs, but Marty Lamb's is the most Obama-like sign, actually, because it has the flag as a road. Or a path, which is what... So I actually like the fact that Marty Lamb, former Democrat...
And he was a major donor to many Democrats. I believe it was Ed Markey who had given a lot of money to.
There you go. Yeah. That right-wing Democrat, Ed Markey. I just like whoever the graphic designer is for Lamb, like, playing the subliminal Obama card. So the other three, we got like a minute and a half. Chipman here, Dele... Why should people vote or not vote for them? I guess we're saying that they shouldn't vote for Stopa because
he's a raving lunatic.
He's a raving lunatic, and we're saying maybe you should vote for Lamb depending on how fast his mile time is.
Marty also had, I think, the best promo of the campaign so far. His mailers were barf bags that got picked up in the national press. That was something.
The idea not being that Marty Lamb himself would make you throw up, but that Jim McGovern would make you throw up.
After he runs endurance races, it's not uncommon to vomit, so I'm sure he has every once in a while, but I bet he just does that in a shrub like a normal person, not necessarily carrying around an airline barf bag.
I want to see a Marty Lamb sweatband.
I mean, that whole crew, I would have to make the argument that I think Brian Herr is probably the most pragmatic. and sort of moderate Republican out there, like classical New England sort of Republican.
We've got 20 seconds.
That's all I got on.
So that's our endorsement. If you care what Brandon Milliken thinks, maybe Harris, you're a Republican candidate. See you next week, guys.